yesterday. We consider all the true values of life and came to the conclusion that true value lies in knowing oneself and knowing all else. Man is thrice blessed. He has got physical body, intellect and soul. So he should develop in all three ways so that he may be the full benefit of the man's life. So, considering all other matters, we ultimately came to this decision that man who has not dwelt spiritually, however he may have dwelt physically or intellectually, is nowhere. For the reason that we have to leave the body sometime. This is only a temporary abode which we have to make the best use of it. Man is the highest of all creation, and it is in that only that we can meet God. Know ourselves, know ourselves. If we have not done that work, we have, truly speaking, lost our most precious life, which was bestowed to us as a man. We also came to the conclusion that time does come when something leaves this body. That something is that we are. That is called soul. That is conscious entity. But under the control of mind, it is so much united that it cannot differentiate itself from the mind. And mind is further swayed by the outgoing faculties. We have identified ourselves with the body and its environments, so much so that we cannot now differentiate who we are, what we are. And what led to this conclusion, you see, that was the subject which I dealt with yesterday. How we forgot ourselves. So that was explained that the outgoing faculties, we have been working through them for wanting light. We have been receiving impressions from outside. One majority of three of the outgoing faculties, sight, audition and taste, that all the time when we go to sleep, close our eyes, we think of the same impressions we receive through them. When we go to sleep, in dreams even that those very impressions are reproduced, as it were we are living an only superficial life. So our inner eyes were shut. So to say, we have become blind in the terminology of the masters. Because God is within us, but inner eye is not open with which we can see that light. God's eyes is in every heart, but our inner ears are closed. That is why we have, as it were, become deaf to hear that voice. Similarly, we are given up to the taste of the things outside so much so that the real bliss, the sweet elixir of the divine link existing in each man, that we are not able to taste now. Ultimately, we came to the conclusion that we are, as it were, sleeping in a house of body, and the passions are just assailing us. When man is asleep in a body, you see, in a house, anybody can come take away anything he likes. So we do not know when we are just assailed by the passions. How to overcome that, that is ultimately we arrive at the conclusion that somebody who is competent to raise us above the outgoing faculties, only then we can be saved the attacks of passions through the various outgoing faculties which we are now having. So if we could sit at the feet of somebody who can transcend the body himself and give us an experience how to transcend these outgoing faculties, at his feet we will come to know what is what, why our inner eyes can be opened, you see. Divinity already exists in man, that is only an expression thereof that we learn at the feet of some master. So that was the subject yesterday. Today's subject is, you see, our soul, our conscious entity. God is all consciousness, and we are a drop of the ocean of life, of consciousness. But our mind is controlled, complete control of mind. Now mind is further strained by the outgoing faculties. Unless the mind turn away from the earthly things, we cannot go inside or transcend the body or have ingress into the kingdom of God. How we can control mind and contact the divine link, God in action power, you might say, which is supporting each one of us, and as also all the creations, how can we contact with that power? That would be the subject of today's talk. But yesterday I quoted, and day before, two masters of the East, one Kabir and the other Guru Arjuna, fifth Guru of the sixth, and gave quotations from Bible and others, just to show that they were teaching, well, one on this point. Today we are taking up just a hymn from Guru Amar Das, another master who came to the East. Let us see what he has to say on this subject. Now you find everybody is doing something at least, you see. Those who are interested in the subject, the mystery of life, has entered their hearts. They cannot remain unraveled. So everybody is striving to do something. But they find one difficulty. They are just trying, putting time to read the holy scriptures of all saints who came in the past. They are just putting in time to attend the holy places of worship, say one prayers or the other, but they feel one difficulty while doing so, and that is, while they are praying, while they are reading the holy scriptures, while they are attending the other rituals, mind is wandering away. Their body is there, their mouths are repeating the same thing, but at the same time mind is wandering away. For a minute it stays and then wanders away. That is a practical difficulty. Those who are doing something on the way, they find that difficulty before them. So Guru Amar Das, I tell you, that he was in search of this truth. He went over from town to town in India, and visited many places of pilgrimages and the holy Ganges on the banks of it. There are many rishis lived in the past. Even they consider they are some even now. Up to the age of 70 years, he was just going on there to find out somebody so that he be put on the way. But on the way, once when he was going, it so happened that another man was also on the way, you see, some recluse. He wanted water for drinking, and Guru Amar Das just brought the water for him and he drank. He put him the question, who is your master? Have you ever sat at the feet of some master? He was a truthful man. He said, no, so far I have not found any master that whose feet I could sit and could find the way up. He says, oh my God, I have taken water from a man who has not even the face of the master. I'm the most unfortunate. He cursed himself. That struck Guru Amar Das very badly. Well, is it so bad not to have a master in life? Really, truly speaking, to have a living master is a great blessing, I tell you. So he was so much shocked at the statement made by that recluse that he came back. Fortunately, it so happened, you see. There are many things, many opportunities with us, but we do not exactly follow or make the best use of them. The daughter of the second guru of the sixth, Guru Angad by name, she was married to this grandson of Guru Amar Das. She was there. She had a guru. She had a master. She knew the way up. That day when he heard her reciting the scriptures, he went to her and asked him, whose scripture it is. He remembered that my father is now carrying on this mission of Guru Nanak, so you can go to him. So he asked her to just accompany her to her father and went over there. The second guru, you see, when he heard that my daughter's father-in-law has come, so he naturally came out. According to the custom, they wanted to meet him, embrace him. But Guru Amar Das said, look here, I have not come now as a, in that relation, you see, in that way of relation, but I have come as a slave at your feet. So he did what he said, and ultimately he had that realization of himself and over self. Then only he gave up the things after that, when he reach that point, you see, of realization. He says, we are doing something. Some are saying prayers, some are offering water to the sun, some are this way, that way, so many in all social religions, there are different rituals, different formalism, some are just within the holy places of worship, this and that thing, with all that, they find that very difficulty confronting them, that mind is not still. In outward thing, you see, mind can be engaged and maybe stop, stay for a short time, but again it wanders away. I remember the time when my master, Tamal Singh Ji Maharaj, one pandit came to him, and when he listened to the talks given by the master, he was convinced and wanted initiation. When he was initiated, he had some experience within. He told him, well, look here, what have you said? I will do, complete that course within 2 or 3 months and come back again. His master laughed a bit. Alright, what else is worth it? Do it. He went away. Fortunately, at the time when this talk was took place, I was there, present. Okay. But he did not turn up in the 2 or 3 months, he turned up, say, after 6 or 8 months. When he again came and met the master, I was also there. What did he say? Look here, master, previously coming to you, I was devoting 6 to 8 hours in the just for following the rituals and prayers and reading scriptures, etc. 6 to 8 hours, the mind would not disturb me. But now, mind is not still even for 5 minutes. You follow why? In outward engagement, mind does get some interest. It has got something to see, to be engaged. But when you leave this outward things, mind cannot be still in time. I tell you, like a child, if you shut him up in a dark room, what will he do? He will simply knock the door, break the doors, cry. But if you have something inside to stay on, and that becomes a very interesting thing to him, then he keeps quiet. So why is it, unless you get something inside, outer performance of the outer rituals and formalism, you see, easier. Because for some time at least, that will be controlled for a while, but again that will wander away. So Guru Amar Das says, look here, our mind is just wandering away to all sides. How a man with such a mind, you see, how can he really sing the praises of the Lord? Now he again says, where it goes, you see, what are the sources through which this mind goes out to the outward things? He says it is through the outgoing faculties. Those outgoing faculties are taking possession of the mind, so much so it has become attached that it cannot leave it, you see. One day he does something, 2 days, 4 days, it becomes recurrence, brings in habit, and habit when strengthened, it turns into nature. So once you have just got a habit of something, to unravel there, that becomes a bit difficult. Because from the very birth, you see, our mind has been attached to the outside things, to the outward faculties, you see. All the time dreaming, talking, thinking, seeing, hearing, the outside. I think so. It has been attached to the outward life. How to still it? What's the result? So at times we fall prey to lust and to anger. You see? Now the ongoing factor, we just consider for a minute, mark. You see? It comes to the light, burning light, and it singes itself, you see, consumes itself in the past. One outgoing faculty of sight is controlling the mark. The result is death. Deer are antelope in the jungles, they are very fast running animals, you see. Even the fastest horse cannot overtake it, but how the people catch him, you see. Just they drum it, they just beat the drums outside, and that wise he is so much so taken away that he comes near it and lays his head on the drum. And the people who are after it catch him, and their whole life long he is under custody, controls, and slave for whole life. You see now elephant, how strong an animal it is, how they are caught. It is very difficult to catch one elephant from the jungle. The one they do, they just have some very deep ditches dug into the ground. And over that they lay some branches of trees, very thin, and some grass over it, so that it may not be known that there is a ditch beneath. So just make or put on there, and just pack a mouse of female elephant. Elephant comes, being given up to the outgoing faculty of touch, he just gallops in, just down the big ditch. For some days, elephant is kept hungry, and after the enter, you say that iron rod is kept all through life and slave. Similarly, take the case of a fish that is under the control of the outward faculty of the taste. Free it is in the river, or say, ocean. How the fishermen catch it? By throwing the net into the river and just putting some things on that, they put in something to eat. So they come and just put it in the mouth, and that very hook is just stuck in the neck, and when the fisherman takes away the net along with that, the fish comes out and dies. So you see, we give one example of each. Whichever of this creation is subject to the slavery of one outgoing faculty, the result is either death or lifelong slavery. What to speak of a man who is under the control of the five outgoing faculties at a time? When our soul, under the control of the mind, it is driven away at a time to the outside things, you see, not by one outgoing faculty, but five all together, where the room left for the soul to get contact with the divine language already in this way. The result is the fall in lust or anger. Now in lust you will find the seat of the soul in the body is back the eyes. You must have just seen some man die. The lower portion is dead. And the soul is withdrawn, comes back the eyes, and eyes are upturned like that. He is alive. Lower portion is benumbed and dead, but he is still alive. It shows that the seat of the soul in the body is back the eyes. And then ultimately leaves the body. So the soul which is just directed to lust has a downward tendency, but he has to leave to go up. How can that soul go which is just given up to the lust for that purpose? This is chastity is life and sexuality is death. We have to be pure in thought, word and deed. Of course, those who have entered the household of life, they have to live according to the sacraments of their religion, you see. For that purpose, that is also, you see, household of life is not a machinery of enjoyment, excuse me. It is a very blessed, I think, place where man has to live, just have a companion in life, go to just companion life in this earthly life, and go ahead, go together. And of course, one duty is there of begetting children, that's all right, but it's not the be all and end all. We have considered wrongly, we think that perhaps this household life is only the machinery of enjoyment. Well, that is not so. To observe celibacy, or restrict yourself this very valuable life, you might say, you have to maintain it. If one is addicted to downward tendency, naturally the soul cannot go leave the body. Similarly, through anger, the mind expands. Such a sad man is like reality, thinking even of others. Either mind is going down or expanding. Such a man, how can he concentrate? The Master says at one place, the man whose body has not been just besmeared and defiled with the thoughts of anger and lust. He is the image of God. You see him, your thoughts will change. In that atmosphere, when you will sit, you will have a charging of something higher value of life. So he says, but our minds betraying us into the enjoyments of the outward life, we have to make the best use of it. Mind is a good servant, mind burns like fire, but it is a bad master. A fire is in your control that will cook up your things, that will carry on your machinery, you see, and other things. But once the fire takes hold of you, you are nowhere. You are consumed. Similarly, if you have mind under your control, that works wonders. You can work wonders. And if mind controls you, then you are the all man of the world. That's all. The mind has to be controlled. That's the main difficulty. It lies in the way up to God, you see. In the ocean of mind, innumerable waves coming out of various directions, you see. They affect us, they drown us, unless with the proper guidance and help of some master that can only lead us across. So what does he do? He just transcends you from the plane where the outward faculty works. Very first, the ABC of leaking stars, just when you are up the outgoing faculties. All these impressions from outside are the apertures through which these passions assail on you, attack on you, are the outgoing faculties, eyes, ears, nose, mouth, etc. So first this lesson starts, just makes you sit, gives you an experience how to transcend the body, just open your inner eye to contact with the divine link within. Only then man can, mind can be controlled. And you see, the mind is one. You can engage it into one thing at a time, not two, three, four. You may engage it in the enjoyment of the sensuous life, or direct it to the enjoyment of the higher blissful life. If your mind is just attached to something higher, naturally out of things you become less effective. So if there's any impediment, I may say, in our way back to God is mind. One Mohammedan saint says that if you have a resolute will to see God overhead, then what is the best way up? Just put one foot on the mind, that is, stop it by going astray, and the next step you will take, that you will just fall into the kingdom of God. But I will tell you, mind is really a blessing, I tell you, but its direction is only to be set right. You see, probably in Bible somewhere it is said that Habil and Kabil, the story of Habil and Kabil, lower mind and the higher mind. Lower mind are the pity mind, what is called in the East, until that it is given, you see, control, higher mind cannot lead you up. So lower sentient mind, mind has a very vast area, you see. It is one, but it works in three planes. In the physical plane, it is called pini mind. In the higher astral plane, it is called andi mind, astral mind. In still higher, the third plane, it is called brahmani mind, cosmic mind, what we say. But it is all the same. Mind in itself is material. It gets consciousness are sent from the soul.
Hello. Welcome to the satsang for Master Kripal Singh. The recording that was just played was the first 30 minutes of the talk titled How to Contact Divinity Within. The talk was given by Master in June 1955 at Washington, D.C. Our reader this evening is Claire Stannard. Hello, Claire.
Hello. The talk, the reading today is called Love is the Way. It was published in the February 1976 issue of Satsandesh. This talk was given by Master Kripal Singh at the Friends Meeting House in Washington, D.C. on January 25, 1964. We are all children of light. I was wondering how I should address you, because I see you in me and I in you. I think the best way I can address you is as my friends. I have not made you slaves, but equals, because only an equal man can recognize what he is. Those under him cannot know him from that status. You are all my friends. I have love and regard for you. Ever since I came in contact with you physically in 1955, although physically I was in India, I have been carrying your sweet remembrance with me all along. During the day, I was very much burdened with the work over there, but at night, I was all along with you, replying to your letters. During the day I was there, at night I was with you. This is the other part of the world. When there is night there is day here. So I was working all during the day, there or here. I have been appreciating your loving thoughts, which you have been sending to me from time to time, and your anxiety to have me here. I wanted to be here, but on account of exigencies of service, I was tied down over there. But you know, stone walls do not make a prison house, nor iron bars a cage. Though physically I was bound there, in my mind and spirit, you were with me all along. That I can assure you. Even hereafter, the God in me will be with you, guiding you and helping you in all your affairs. It is through the grace of my master, Baba Sawan Singh Ji, that this is being extended to you, that it was extended to you in the past, and that it will continue to be hereafter too. Ever since I've come here, I've been feeling quite at home. I never thought of my home. I forgot India because of the love that radiated all around me. There I was among my friends, and here also I am among my friends. Of course, during the day I am here, but at night I have to attend to India in the same way that I did for you here when I was in India. You are all dear to me. Whether you are in the East or the West makes no difference to me. Outer forms make no difference. I see you from the level of the man body or at the level of embodied souls. You are children of light. This present tour has been taken as the extension of what my master wanted of me. He impressed on me to have a common ground for all men, irrespective of whether they belong to one religion or the other. They are all the same as man, and further, they are embodied souls. He wanted me to have a common ground for all, where men belonging to all religions of the East or West could sit together on the same earth and under the same canopy of heaven. So it is with His grace that this present renovation, you might say, or revival of the old truths taught by all past rishis and masters is being given out. In the Vedas, the Atharva Veda, the Rig Veda, it is said, thousands of you sit all together, pray to God. We have joined various religions, which are our schools of thought, and we have joined them to know God. These religions are our recruiting centers from which we have to join the army of God. We have to become the true Khalsas in the terminology of the 10th guru of the Sikhs. Zoroaster was asked, "We are to join the army of God. What is required to do that? What is the qualification?" He never mentioned any one religion or the other. Masters always look to all mankind from the level of the man body, from the universal level. They consider all humanity to be their family. Guru Nanak had a wife and two sons. When he left his hearth and home to carry this message to all the world over, the worldly people came up to him and said, "What are you doing? Why are you leaving your family?" He said, "Look here, the whole of mankind is my family." This is the level from which all masters who came in the past gave out their teachings. They laid before us the way to come up to that level. These schools of thought that are called religions, which we have joined and whose outer forms we took as badges, were means to the end to free our souls and unite them with God. They were meant for our freedom, but those very religions have become the chains and fetters to bind us. That was never the purpose of joining any school or religion. So what is required, the people asked Zoroaster, for joining the army of God? He said, righteousness. And what is righteousness? Good thoughts, good words, and good deeds. This is what all other masters said. Guru Nanak said the same thing. Truth is above all, and true living is still above truth. While you are here on this common ground of spirituality, you forget your outer levels of living. This is the first quality you acquire when you come to some master. You lose all otherness. You see all mankind as one. You see the same soul in everyone, the soul which is the drop of the ocean of all consciousness. We are all children of light. Naturally, what lies before us is to love God. We love God, and that very God resides in every heart. Since our souls are of the same essence as that of God, naturally we love all. To love all is the main thing, because God is love. God is light, and we are also children of light. God is life, and we are all conscious beings. God is love, and we are also love. So the way back to God is also love. This is the main lesson that we learn at the feet of the masters. It prepares the way to God. All our outer rituals, rites, sayings of prayers, and reading of scriptures are meant to develop that love and devotion in us. Blessed is the society or the school of thought to which we belong, in which we develop this very precious jewel of love. What is required, as I told you, is righteousness. And righteousness means good thoughts, good words, and good deeds. It further enjoins us naturally to live a life of continence, of control over our senses. So many senses are dragging us through our outgoing faculties to all the world over. If you would like to control one passion, you must have control over all outgoing faculties. If you control one organ of sense and let the others run loose, it is just like putting your hand into fire and expecting that it will not burn. This is what is required: control over the senses. The attention, which is the outcome of our souls, or expression of our souls, is diffused into the world through the senses and sense organs. We know now how to know God by simple ways. God cannot be known by the outgoing faculties, by the intellect, or by the vital air. It is the soul alone that can know God. Like alone can know the like. So the outward expression of soul is attention, which is diffused into the outside world. It is to be collected, you might say. The rays of attention are to be brought back to their source, our soul, which is at the back of the eyes. That is the first thing to be done. You are not to touch the pranas, or to have recourse to any physical exercises, or to engage in intellectual wrestling to come to some conclusion. This is because it is the attention, or the expression of soul, that gives life to the intellect, to the mind, and to the outgoing faculties. I think you might at some time have experienced that when you sat in a very absorbed condition, you went into a transport. Your intellect and your outgoing faculties did not work. The way of the masters is purely withdrawing the attention from outside, entering this laboratory of the man body, and leaving these organs of sense. Retrace all the rays of the attention back to their source, the soul at the back of the eyes. When you come there, you will find God already there. This is a natural way. This is called the Surat Shabd Yoga, Surat Yoga. Or you might call it the Path Divine. This is the easiest way. Even children see light if a little attention for withdrawal is given. This is the natural way, which all masters gave to children, to the old, to the learned, and to the unlearned. When the masters came, what did they tell us? I mentioned it very briefly in a few words in my message, too. They said, love is the way back to God. God is love, and our souls are also love. And it is through love alone that we can know God. Love knows true renunciation, service, and sacrifice. For whom? Not for the self, but for the good of others without any consideration. All masters say that love is the way back to God. Read any scripture. And there we are wanting. We are very intellectual. We are very wise in all other affairs. But we are wanting in love. Love is not grown in any field. It cannot be bought at any shop. It is already within you, ingrained within you. It is innate. That love has simply been misfit. Where does that misfit love take us? To the body, to the enjoyment of the senses, and to the attachments of the outside world. The result is, where do we go? Where we are attached. So this love, which is misdirected, is called love. But if you look to its reality, you will find it is God in itself. Because God is love and our soul is love, when love is withdrawn from outside and we come within, we come in contact with all love. This is what is required. Christ said, "Those who do not understand love cannot understand God. Those who do not know love cannot know God." The 10th Guru of the Sikhs also gave us the same thing. "Hear ye all, irrespective of whether you belong to the East or the West, to one country or the other, or to one religion or the other, I tell you the truth, God is had only through love." But we have not understood the true meaning of love. We take it to be the enjoyment of the senses with the body and outside things. That is not true love. Mind that. Love is a gift from God to man. Love seeks union with the beloved. First there is yearning, there is pining. You want to see him, to be near him. What is love? What is the result of love? When love is there, whatever, for whomever, you are always constantly in sweet remembrance of him. That is the outward token of love. First, you would like to be near him. Then you would not like to disobey any order he gives. As Christ said, "If you love me, keep my commandments." He said further, "I give you a new commandment, love one another." We say we love God, but we do not love one another. Why? All masters say, "Love God, love thy neighbor, and love all creation." If we love God and do not love our brothers, then what does the Bible say? You are a liar. Do you see? If you do not love your brother whom you see, how can you love God whom you do not see? So love, ultimately, after yearning, wants to be near him, to obey him, and then obedience will result in surrender. Obedience seeks the pleasure of the beloved. Why do you want to be obedient? You want to seek the pleasure of the beloved, whom you love. One who loves is a lover of the beloved, and one who obeys is the beloved of the beloved. If you love your master, master loves you. Those who are more obedient, who love him, and never transcend any of his injunctions, become the most beloved of him. Ramakrishna was sometimes seen weeping for Swami Vivekananda when he did not find him. "It was by the grace of my master that I used to go to him twice a week, sometimes weekly, the maximum number of times I could. Sometimes it happened that I could not go, and he would send someone to go to find out, and he would send someone to go to find out why I did not come." It also happened that he took the car and drove to Lahore about 40 miles, and he went and stood under my office and sent a man up to call me down. Do you see? If you love the Master loves you the most. You become the beloved of the beloved. We have not ever thought of the value of love. We say we are lovers of the Masters. Then why is there so much discord and disunion? When two men love the same thing, there should be competition only of this kind. If one man puts in 6 hours in meditation, you put in 7 hours. If one man serves selflessly, you do even more service than that. If one man puts one shoulder to the wheel, you put your two shoulders to the wheel. This is what he really means by love. About love, I say, one who loves is the lover of the beloved, and one who obeys becomes the beloved of the beloved. Who is the greater? And that love should also be within a respectful mood. Once I wrote my master a letter in which I said, I pray, grant me love, your love, but that love should be within respectful limits. Sometimes out of love, we transcend the limits. Sometimes we want to overrule the one whom we love. That's not the way of the true lover. He received the letter and put it on his breast. He said, I want such a one who loves within a respectful mood. You will find that for one who surrenders, nothing has any existence other than the beloved. Surrender is above obedience. Obedience is sometimes practiced in a willy-nilly way, but surrender means giving up everything for the beloved. You have nothing else except the beloved. So, greater than love is obedience, mind that. Greater than love is obedience. And all these can be summed up in love divine. This is perhaps the only lesson or injunction or counsel I can give you to make you successful in all ways of life, especially in your spiritual life, because you abide in the one you love. Christ said, Let my words abide in you, and you abide in me. How can you abide in him? First, by obedience, and second, by surrender. As you think, so you become. The fifth guru of the sixth tells us that if the disciples remember the Master, what does the Master do? Whom does he remember? His loving souls. Never for a moment think that the God in the Master forgets you. For instance, I told you at the commencement of my talk that when I was in India, I was with you here at night. When I am here, I am there at night. When the sun rises there, I am there. When the sun rises here, I am here. Do you see? That is God in me, not the Son of Man. Godhood is the birthright of every man. Fortunately, we have that birthright. It is the grace of God. And the grace of God has further descended in that we have some desire, some yearning for God. It is to achieve him, to find him, that we have cared to join any school of thought or religion. It is possible true love alone to become God, I would say. The lover and the beloved both become one. Christ said, I and my Father are one. And St. Paul said, it is I, not now I, but it is Christ that lives in me. This is what is meant by the word Gurmukh. Master is God in man, and a lover of the Master becomes a Gurmukh. He becomes the Guru, a God-man in man. This is the ultimate seat of love, and this is the easiest way. I remember a story that has just struck me. Lord Rama went into exile for 14 years. He went to the wilderness where many other yogis were living. There was one lady there, a very low caste. She heard that Lord Rama was coming into exile into the wilderness. And what did she do? She thought, Rama will be coming, and he may be barefooted, so that the thorns might prick his feet. So she simply cleared away the way of all thorns. And then she thought, in the heart of her heart, when he comes, what shall I offer him? In the wilderness there is no food to eat, but there are berries everywhere. She began to pluck berries and taste them. Those that were sweet, she put in her pocket. So she kept all those tasted berries with her. Each of the yogis who was living there thought that perhaps he was the greatest of the yogis, and that Lord Rama would be coming to his cottage. Mind that this I-hood, I know better, I am better than all these others, is the last weakness that leaves a man, even the so-called masters. But where did Rama go? When he went to the wilderness, he met the lady who had collected the berries. And what did he do? She offered him those berries that were tasted, and he ate them. Love knows no law. Love is above all. The yogis living there had been doing penances for hundreds of years. Then he went to them, and they came up to him and asked, "Will you kindly grace our cottage?" There was a pond of water where they lived that was full of small insects. There was no other source of water, and they asked Lord Rama if he would just clean the pond of all dirt and insects by his grace, by putting his feet into the water. He said, "No, I think you are the greatest of the yogis. Why don't you put in your feet, for they must be better able to clear up the pond?" They did, and the water remained the same. Then they forced him, "Kindly put your feet into the water, and all insects will go." He said, "All right, it is up to you." He also put his feet into the pond, but the insects were still there. Lord Rama had to demonstrate the greatness of love. True love does not know any show, mind that. He said, "I think it would be best if you called that Bilni." A Bilni is a black woman, very low caste. "And let her put her feet into the water." Then she came and put her feet into the water, and the pond was cleared. These are instances to show that love is a great miracle. God is love. Through love only, you become one with God. You can become one with Him whom you love. As you think, so you become. Well, I'll close there and continue reading this talk the next time I read. It is called Love is the Way, published in the February 1976 issue of Satsang Desh and given by Master Kirpal Singh at the Friends Meeting House in Washington, D.C. on January 25th, 1964. Thank you, Master.
Thank you, Claire, for reading this for us. There were 62 people in attendance for this evening's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and thank you, Master, for providing this for us.
So it is high time for the golden opportunity that we have got to see. We have got the man body for this long, so many years, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years old sitting. Have you reached God? Well, good. If not, hurry up. So this is the item for that.